I've always rather been inclined to, well, disregard it, to say the least. Eglon takes the bet. It's only just that that I sort of felt that I might be inclined to come. I appreciate people coming if they want very much to get into touch with some soul, some friend on earth, or they have something of importance to speak about, or perhaps to give some help or comfort to someone who's in dire distress. And of course I know there are certain souls who make a habit of coming regularly, who probably feel that they're able to give some knowledge appertaining to this new life. I suppose it all rather boils down to the individual as to whether they should come or not. Fortunately, we have free will. We don't have to come back unless we want to, or if we feel the need is urgent. I'm rather being myself inclined to stay away from us. Couldn't quite see from my point of view what benefit could possibly be derived from this. Perhaps it is I'm a little selfish, inasmuch that I'm so content and so happy here, that I really have no real desire to make a connection or contact on earth. There is no one now very near or dear to me, and the point of view of coming didn't strike me as being very, well, necessary. Anyway, curiosity, more than anything else, I've come to see what you look like on your side of life. And I must admit that considering I haven't been anywhere near the earth for must be 50 years, I would say that speaking from my own personal point of view, I have no particular desire to come again. So much seems to have changed. Life seems to have become so fast. People seem now to have no time one for the other. And the tranquility and peacefulness of the countryside seems to have become disrupted by all these modern inventions which seem to evidently get you a bite very quickly, in the process of which you see nothing, or very little I should think. And at the same time, seems to me that you have no real time to concern yourselves with the things that really matter. Everyone seems to be very unsettled. No one seems to be particularly satisfied or happy. And quite frankly, although I understand and it seems that the poorer classes have been certainly given a better way of life, at least they seem to have every modern convenience, and they seem to have every possible opportunity, which really, in a sense, makes them, I don't know, so vastly different from what I remember the poor classes. Of course, I know there was dire poverty and distress, and I know that in many senses, the poor classes had a very rough time, and all that in advantage to the good. One wants to see progress for people, and it's nice to know that nowadays they do have more money in their pockets and more leisure and better housing, and indeed have made vast progress in certain respects anyway. At least they're now well fed and well looked after, and certainly seem to wash well.
Can you tell us something about yourself, your name, and what you're doing, what sphere you're on?
my name, got very much with the day, anything to do. I don't see any reason why I should know. My name was Isaac. Isaac Watson.
Isaac Watson, yes.
It wasn't my name. Watson was not the family name, but we changed it to Watson. For reasons, family reasons. Mm-hmm. It was a Jewish family. Mm-hmm. And my father was in business.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, I entered the business when I was 15, 16. And we were very successful. But my brother still started various businesses. Actually, we were of Polish descent. My father came to England in his youth in the early 1800s. But it's a long story. I'm sure you're not interested in our family history.
Were you brought up strictly in the Jewish faith?
Oh, yes, I was brought up in the Jewish faith. But in my 30s, I wouldn't have said I had any religion particularly. I wasn't very keen. I wasn't very interested in religion as such. In fact, if anything, I think I became more or less what you term an atheist. I read a good deal, read various books on this subject, as a matter of fact, in the latter years of my life. I can't say that I was terribly impressed, even though I was interested. There's such a lot of nonsense goes on, of course. There's another reason, I think, why I wasn't all that keen on coming back. As so much nonsense goes on in this business of spiritualism. Besides, I didn't want to come back. As a matter of fact, I had enough of your world and I was there one way and another. A very unsuccessful marriage. I wasn't a fit man. My health wasn't good. And I had long illness. And I was very glad to leave your world altogether. I was perhaps not an easy person to get along with, and at the same time, I think that I tried to do the best I could for my work people. I wasn't a bad person. I didn't think I certainly wasn't a taskmaster, and I tried to give them all the help that I could, and indeed, I think I can say in comparison the vast majority of businesses of my time and people of my time and position, I think I treated my people extremely well. I wouldn't like to think that I'm sort of satisfied with myself. It felt funny to me. But looking back and remembering the dire poverty that there was, particularly in the built-up areas, in the big cities, in Leeds and Manchester and so on, I think really today, of course, people have much better opportunity. But this business of communication, I realize, of course, it could do a great deal of good, but I don't think you'll ever get to break down the barriers that people built up from religious intolerance. And I think the task is so immense. Well, I don't know how many religions you've got, must be hundreds of them, I think. Everybody all sort of sticking to their guns.
Could you choose to make your son a life?
Oh, I could. As a matter of fact, since I've been here, I've changed a lot of my views. But I suppose it is that one gets so adjusted to a new life, with all its many interests and the many attractions that there are in all sorts of ways. But gradually, particularly if you've been unhappy as I was on earth, for various very good reasons, you're very glad to forget it all and settle here and take an interest in life. And I don't see the sense in some of these people made the habit of coming back. Tell me what good it does them or anyone else. Of course, I suppose I give it an outside exception.
Mr. Watson, what was your actual reaction on part, you know? Can you give us a description of
it? Six in relief.
How do you find yourself?
Since the tremendous relief, my goodness, and I seem glad to get away from the earth and out of that body of mine and away from, well, some of the people that were only just waiting for me to die so that they could get my money. But I'm afraid they were all rather disappointed. I made sure of that.
How did you actually find yourself, Mr. Watson? What conditions did you find yourself?
Well, conditions.
Well, I mean, what sort of...
Well, I found myself over here first in England, and was my father coming to meet me. The funny thing was, I remember waking up, I suppose is the way you put it, what appeared to be what it was, garden. I first of all, I thought it was the garden of our old house. We had a magnificent garden. My father was a great gardener, very interesting there. And this place was so nice. And I remember sitting on a seat, looking across the lawns to an ornamental lake, which my father had had built. Then I remember waking up, seeing my father coming towards me with his hands outstretched. First, it didn't strike me as odd. I think I thought of it all in such a natural manner, as if it was the most natural thing. And I remember him sitting down beside me and congratulating me. For this struck me as odd, why I should be congratulated, but I didn't consider what I'd done, what I'd achieved, and he wasn't a demonstrative man on earth. And you know, he was telling me how happy he was that I'd come through and succeeded. And for a moment I didn't understand what he was referring to, and then it suddenly dawned on me that this is all an unnatural situation. What was I doing on this seat? In this particular place, which was really some 40 years previously, possibly more, my youth, my early years, my formative years. We often went to the country during the summer months when business permitted, and in the winter too. And it was just as if I'd come down for a week or two in the country to my father's place, and it struck me as being so strange, because it was as if I could remember that particular moment that I had been much older, that I was lying on the bed, and I was, and had been for many months, suffering a great deal of my lung and chest and a great difficulty breathing. Here I was, as natural and as breathing as easily as I had done in the old days. And my father said, you know, you're now out of it all. It began to dawn on me that this is an unreal situation. Rather, what he meant was that I was out of the old life, and I couldn't help thinking to myself, well, I can't be dead, and yet everything seems to imply that some big change has taken place, because this is also familiar, and yet it's 40, 50 years ago in my life. Then I thought to myself, well, how could it be this place, if it's a new life that I mean, if this is true? And I didn't see how my father's property could be over on this side of life. It was all bewildering. And he was saying to me, of course, you know that we have still got the old house. And I thought this was so strange. He said, you know, this is an exact replica. I said, what do you mean exact replica? Sort of the old home. And I could see, of course, that it evidently was a replica, although to me it seemed identical. I thought it was the house, and I knew it couldn't be. And he said, well, let us go in and see the others. I said, others, what others? And he said, oh, brother, and Simon. Simon was a young brother, by the way, who passed the infancy. When he said Simon, it didn't mean a thing to me. I said, Simon, Simon, and this is Simon. He said, Simon is a brother. tremendous baby brother died when you were about 3 or 4 years old. I didn't remember any of this. Anyway, we went into the old house. 6 seconds the same. Everything about it was the same. The same furniture, the same statue, the same mantel shelf. Everything was identical in the drawing room. The piano was there. And I could see, as it was, if I were then back 50 years old, perfectly reproduced. There was my mother, looking so young, so very young, and I hardly realized the person. It was she, but it was she, but as she was when my mother and father presumably first met. And there was a tall, young fellow, I should think. He looked about 17, 18, turned out to be this brother who died in infancy. Puzzling. And then I remember asking my people, I said, well, how is it that you have this house? How did it come about? I said, I accept the fact that you say I'm dead and I realize something tremendous has happened, but I don't understand how it is that one should have one's own home reproduced. Who makes all the furniture? Who makes all the carpets and things? And how does all this come about? And my father said, well, this is something which is not easy to explain. But this is something which you have earned, which we have earned. And I thought to myself, well, I didn't know that I've earned anything in particular. And I'm remembering my father, although he was in many respects a good man, at the same time he was a very strict man. Then, I suppose, really business which one had to be. But on earth, he was honest and just. And indeed he was a remarkable man in many ways, but I couldn't see the justification for all of this, which seemed so remarkable because it was so identical and everything. But I was saying, of course, to some extent, one's condition, surroundings, one's life, if you like, is due to a great extent as to what you were yourself on earth, your attitude of mind to others, your efforts on behalf of others, and to some extent the way in which you yourself have given yourself to others. And as he was saying this, I couldn't help but think, well, there may be something in this. He said, sir, and yet I couldn't fix it that my father, or for that matter myself, but particularly all the generous people. We were sensible, we helped people, it's true, but we were particularly good to our blood people. But even then, what I gather, that as you live, to some extent, that must and does affect your way of life over here and what reception we have. So everything, we couldn't have been so bad. We've made for ourselves some preparation without our even realizing it. As far as I was Orthodox, I was not an Orthodox man as far as religion was concerned. My father was very strictly Orthodox. But of course, I soon gathered that this Orthodox cycle of religion had changed really much, as he was no longer thinking on the old lines. And it seems to me that I lived in a very natural, happy way for a time with my people. And I must say that in many respects our life was very like it had been in my youth, early years on earth. The only thing that I began to realize was that one seemed to have no need for food or drink. At first this puzzled me. I thought I couldn't understand why I didn't have this desire. It was a natural thing. As far as my life was concerned, indeed I was very fond of food until my illness made it impossible to eat a great deal. And the idea of being fit and well and yet having no longer a desire for food and drink seemed as if it were natural. And for that matter, I never saw anything in the way of food. Although there were times when fruit was available, whether this was in some sort of way of thought, and I think possibly it must have been, there are times when possibly one desired it, or felt the desire for it. And there it was. Very seldom did one eat fruit, or eat anything, or desire to drink anything. The thing that interested and appealed to me most in that area, for the figures, if I can also use them over here, was the desire to continue studies which my father had stopped. When I was quite young, I showed a tendency towards music, and my mother encouraged me in this, and for about 2 to 3 years I was about to have lessons. But I think my father began to feel that this was becoming too important in my life. And I was sent away to school, and music was dropped completely. And I'd always sort of, in my later years, regretted this, because I was a great one for going to the opera. I hardly ever missed the season at the Covent Garden. And many recitals, and I used to go to great positions of my day. Indeed, whatever time I could spare, I would give to music. And here I seemed to quite naturally take up again my music. And I suppose it shouldn't have been to my surprise, but my father encouraged me and was delighted when I started again to seriously take an interest in music. And on one occasion, quite early on in my being here, he said, well, would you like to go to a concert? And so I was kind of delighted, but at the same time surprised that he should suggest such a thing, because he had little no time for the arts. He was very much towards business, never had any time for music and arts in particular. And I said, yes, of course I would, but I was a bit puzzled. He said, well, no, we will go. So I was taken to my first concert in a vast, vast building, all so vast that I thought as I entered not only how magnificent and beautiful it was, but at the same time I couldn't help thinking to myself, the vastness of this place, surely, if one sat in some parts of this place, you wouldn't hear very much. But I was amazed and surprised at the acoustic properties and the clear cut, the sound, and the vast orchestra of what appeared to me at least, it was impossible to count, but several hundred musicians, and many of the instruments which they had were completely unfamiliar to me. And there were several pianos, not just one, as one would perhaps expect in a concert, perhaps two, one would have thought, but here there seemed to be at least 20 pianos. Goodness knows how many violins. Indeed, it is the vastest orchestra I've ever seen. And the sound was well beyond description. The extraordinary thing was, behind this great orchestra was what appeared to be a large wall, expansive wall, and which had the appearance of being made of some sort of substance which seemed to give off all kind of hue and colouring. It was extraordinary. It seemed to scintillate. And the whole of this background seemed to change according to the music. Sometimes it would be suffused with the palest of colours, and occasionally there would be flashes of brilliant reds and blues and greens, and colours indeed some of which I couldn't even begin to describe. And it seemed as if all this colour had some connection with the music, according to the passage of the music that was being played. So this seemed to act as a, in such a way, to depicting colour, the theme or idea of the music. And yet, after this, of course, I went to many such concerts, and since then I've met many musicians, and I've always, as I've said, been interested in music, and I have met many great musicians, composers, and now I've become so immersed in music that perhaps that's because one of the reasons why I've never been drawn back to life is that I'm so happy in my life here, in music in particular, that I do not feel the need or the urge to come back. And I'm sure there must be thousands, millions like me, and I'm sure that perhaps for some, it is a good thing to return. There are those who have had specific, special work to do, who are probably themselves the right people for coming back to community. They never have felt the urge. I wouldn't like one to think that I'm so self-centered. I wouldn't like one to think that I was selfish. But I think there are people whose task it is to come back to communicate, to do some special work, perhaps, for humanity. And there are others who, perhaps, in their own way, do something of real consequence in their own environment. Because I do know, and although I've not been in the habit of coming back to work, I do know that my efforts in music have been of some help to souls. When we have gone into other plans and lived into them our music, and I'm sure it has been a great encouragement and a great help for them to raise themselves out of sometimes the darkness in which they find themselves. There are many, many different places. I wouldn't like you to think, as no doubt so many people think, that the earth is the only world. I think it is very wrong. The village, when we say bunches, people to assume that earth is the only world. The earth is only one of many worlds, and there are many different strata of intelligence and beings. And therefore one might say that to some extent the earth is one of the lesser of this world. There are many worlds, and the earth world is, in comparison to some, very backward. Indeed, I would have thought that was very obvious to anyone with any intelligence. When you consider the age of your world and the generations of peoples that have inhabited it, which were still at this stage in your evolution, still talking and thinking about war, you are still indeed making war, you have civil war, and you have all sorts of diseases brought about by man's foolishness and ignorance and stupidity. Indeed, I would go as far as to say that the earth world is perhaps one of the most unprogressed worlds in the atmosphere, in the solar system. I don't think people realize how little progress in some respects has been made. Now, you've had great scientific progress. At the same time, although science may have benefited in some senses, it certainly hasn't brought the world together in mind and in spirit. They have brought you closer together materially, but that's not in itself necessarily such a good thing. If it were to combine the spiritual and the mental and the well-being of humanity, then that would be a different matter. The more I see, as I have seen just recently, into my own appalling mental conditions, the terrible attitude of mind of the human beings one towards the other, and how irrational you are, and how self-centered you are, and how the whole world seems to be full of hatred and intolerance, hasn't learned hardly anything at all. You may flatter yourselves if you progress in certain respects, but actually in some respects it's worse than it's been for centuries. There were little affairs, and I suppose in that time of day we received big affairs where people weren't warm. But now you think nothing of dropping bomb, as you call it, and wiping out thousands of people at the same time. It seems to me that evil has become even more powerful on a vaster scale. And yet you look upon yourselves as civilized human beings, and some of you look upon yourselves as Christians following the Christ. Others have their religious beliefs equally sincere, possibly no doubt, but seems to me that we are living in an age and a time and a world which has gone backwards rather than forwards. And I think until you start thinking more deeply about the things that really matter, the things of the spirit and of the mind, and allow these things to take precedence and become uppermost, paramount importance in your lives, then the whole world's materially receiving is outcome in its approach, even those of the best religious, most of them, so it seems to me, are acting and thinking in a hypocritical kind of way. As a matter of fact, the more I see of your world, the less I like it, and I certainly wouldn't want to come back and be loved. And I must say that if I thought that I could give any real help or service in coming, I would. But frankly, I can't see what good I can do. Don't really think that others on this side, whatever their intention of doing good, no matter how strong it may be, that they can hope to achieve very much. Because even those who profess to know about this subject seem to me to be very little further advanced than the rest, if in some senses as far advanced. Indeed, their responsibilities are greater. It doesn't seem to me that they do very much or achieve very much. I find it appalling that where there are people who have this knowledge of survival, of communication, that we don't get the spiritual and mental advancement that one would have expected. One therefore can only assume that in many instances the contacts and links that are made with souls on a very similar vibrational condition to you as people yourselves. Of course there are exceptions, no doubt, but it does seem to be a tragedy that if you had this opportunity of communication, you don't make more good use of it. Seems to me that you're achieving very little. And therefore, you haven't really seen what good you hope to achieve by it until at least more people understand and accept this and do something about it. So good say, yes, I get into touch with this or that person and we have conversations and it's very wonderful and we know it's true about life after death. That will come quick enough. You'll die quick enough to find out for yourself. And if you do something about it while you're there and you really put your back into it and really get down to doing something of a spiritual nature in such a material world as yours, all your effort seems to be pointless and vain. There's no more to come back with you. I don't see there's any good or advantage in it for anyone. There certainly doesn't seem to have made very much difference. Well, it seems to be worse than I think. I'm staying longer.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I suppose I haven't really done or achieved anything.
You have. You
yeah, I didn't think much good would come of it in the first place.
Oh,
really,
you
quite have. Honestly. I shan't be sorry to get away from it. I pity you, bless you, but I wouldn't want to go through your work again. I can't think of anything I dislike more. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye.